for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. New unemployment claims are down a bit from the previous week, but since mid-March, nearly a half million Virginians have filed jobless claims. Despite the pandemic, there may be a local election near you in just a few days. And we go to one neighborhood in Stanton where every evening, this is the response to the pandemic. From kids to seniors, the howlers of Sherwood Avenue. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 24th. More than 84,000 Virginians filed unemployment claims last week. According to new data released on Thursday by the U.S. Department of Labor, claims dropped by nearly 20% from the previous week when nearly 105,000 Virginians filed unemployment claims. But the number is still a huge increase compared to filings before the coronavirus outbreak began last month, forcing non-essential businesses to shut down. Since March 15th, nearly 500,000 people have filed for jobless benefits in Virginia. Governor Ralph Northam says he will extend a ban on non-emergency surgeries for another week, even as a group representing more than 100 hospitals in the state asked him to allow the ban to expire today. Northam imposed the ban last month in an effort to reserve capacity in the state's healthcare system for coronavirus patients and personal protective equipment, such as face masks for providers treating those patients. Northam said the ban will remain in place until May 1st. Gambling machines in convenience stores and bars will remain legal for one more year in Virginia. Governor Northam and the General Assembly estimate they'll raise $150 million in that time for a COVID-19 relief fund. But the Virginia Lottery says the machines will cost the state's public schools $40 million in lost profits this fiscal year. Governor Northam has promised to veto any bill that would allow the machines to operate beyond one year. Dozens of elections across Virginia are scheduled to take place a few days from now. Efforts to move those elections in light of the pandemic have failed. From Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
More than 60 local elections are scheduled to take place May 5th. That's less than 2 weeks away, during a time when Virginia is under a stay-at-home order. That's why Governor Ralph Northam wanted to delay them until November. But that means candidates would have to qualify for the ballot again during a quarantine, and thousands of ballots that have already been cast would be thrown away. Senator Chad Peterson of Fairfax City says the governor's plan would also be in violation of local charters.
Ignoring a local charter and moving elections to a date off in November, when science doesn't tell us that that's going to be any safer of a date, we have to tackle this problem. The only way to do that is through a special session.
So far, the governor has resisted calls for a special session to move local elections to June 16th. Meanwhile, the Senate has rejected Northam's proposal to move them to November 3rd. That means, for now, the May 5th elections are moving forward as planned. Development Senator Scott Servelle of Fairfax County says is wrong-headed and dangerous.
My father had a kidney transplant 8 years ago. He takes immunosuppressant drugs every day. He's diabetic. He has to work in a city that wants to have one of these elections in May. God forbid that city turn into a COVID hotspot because we chose to go forward with an election.
The governor has authority to push local elections back 2 weeks to May 19th. But if he wants to push them back any more than that, he'll either need to call lawmakers into a special session or find some other kind of emergency authority. Michael Pope.
The Eviction Lab at Princeton University released a report this week rating states' housing policies during the pandemic. Virginia was among the lowest ranking states. One major area of concern is landlords' ability to still file eviction cases. Christy Mara is with the Virginia Poverty Law Center.
We can expect to see 4 to 5 times as many eviction cases as normal.
Another demerit on the housing scorecard is that Virginia does not guarantee legal counsel to people facing eviction. Legal aid societies across Virginia were initially given funding in the state budget to hire 14 new housing attorneys, but the General Assembly put that on pause this week when it returned to Richmond. Lawmakers will take some budget issues up again during a COVID-19-related special session that is expected to take place in a few months. A major milestone for young people, high school graduation will not include big ceremonies this year, so in an effort to make sure they are honored, Senator Tim Kaine is asking students to write graduation speeches.
We will start posting good examples of the wisdom from the class of 2020 on our Senate website and our Senate Facebook to just show off some of these students from all parts of the state.
Kane says students work hard to get to graduation day, and they should have a way to be recognized. Students can submit their speeches to gradspeech@kane.senate.gov. The coronavirus pandemic may have stopped many things, but the census is not among them. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports on what the Commonwealth is doing to make sure that Virginians fill out the form.
Billions of dollars in federal spending is at stake for Virginia, for everything from transportation projects to public schools. And we're off to a solid start, about a 56% response rate. That's above the national average. But since coronavirus has hit, the state has had to rethink its outreach strategy.
In particular, as we focus on how do we reach our hard-to-count communities, a lot of those plans were certainly focused on in-person events.
Kelly Thomason is Secretary of the Commonwealth. Her office is now focusing on virtual outreach through email and social media.
This emergency situation shows us even more why the census is important, why we know how many people are in Virginia and where they're living. So we know how to distribute resources and funding to the communities that need them.
The census can be filled out now, online, by phone, or by mail. I'm Mallory Nopain.
Time now for the latest installment of our series from Virginia Public Radio, still answering listener questions about COVID-19.
This is the COVID-19 Minute, expert answers to your questions. As scientists work to develop and produce an effective vaccine, some people worry that the virus might be mutating. At Virginia Commonwealth University, Professor Alex Crist says that could happen.
The flu is a classic example. The flu virus undergoes drifts and shifts. A drift is a small change and a shift is a major change. And that's why some years the flu shot doesn't work.
But so far, UVA's Dr. Amy Mathers says this new coronavirus is consistent.
There is a small mutation rate, but it's actually quite a stable virus, which bodes well for things like vaccines.
And Dr. Jerry Barden Perkins, a physician who worked at the FDA to approve new drugs for AIDS, says we might see good treatments for COVID-19 if scientists find something that's already approved for some other use.
The first drug that was approved that helped with AIDS was actually intended to treat oncology. So we may have something sitting on the shelf.
But she adds, it's important to study these drugs before prescribing them.
Every drug has a side effect. You have to do the risk-benefit. And certainly if you've got COVID-19, you're willing to take some risk, but you want to be sure that you're not using something that is not shown to be effective if you're using one that's on the shelf. It has to first be safe, do no harm, and then secondly, and also importantly, effective.
More of your questions and expert answers in our next report. I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
Elliot Robinson is the news editor at Charlottesville Tomorrow, one of WMRA's news partners. I spoke with him about their latest reporting and what's happening in Charlottesville during the COVID-19 crisis. Elliot, one of the ongoing stories to tell during this crisis is the effect on businesses that have had to close down or have just lost customers because of the economy's downturn. Your reporter, Billy Jean-Louis, has a story this week about how local organizations such as the Charlottesville Business Innovation Council and Charlottesville's Office of Economic Development are creating networks for entrepreneurs to stay connected. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, this is really a great thing that's been happening in the area because it's really showing people that, yes, I mean, at the end of the day, they do need funding to help stay afloat, but they also need a lot of resources and togetherness. And that's one thing that came out of this was having those groups that helped them build their resiliency and share ideas. So it's just a fantastic thing where the local agencies here have been stepping up to help with not just loans and grants, but also webinars and other information.
Yeah, and it's not an insignificant amount of money. It is just reading from that article from Charlottesville's Office of Economic Development, about $80,000 to 40 different businesses and $30,000 in the business recovery loan. So not an insignificant amount of money.
Right, definitely it's not. As we all know, is that the money for the Paycheck Protection Plan has dried up already. So this was definitely a good boost to these local companies, as there's still so much uncertainty in the next days, months, and weeks.
Well, still talking about money, last time you and I had a conversation, we talked about your partnership with the Cavalier Daily, the UVA student newspaper, which is still operating. And yeah, this week, Patrick Roney had a pretty interesting report about the amount of money that UVA has refunded to students for unused housing and dining costs for the spring semester alone. But the university is getting a lot of that money back from the CARES Act?
Yeah, they're getting a portion of that back. They're anticipating, originally it was $12 million that they were anticipating, but now that's been up to $18 million, but they've received almost $12 million from the CARES Act to help fill that hole. And this really is shows how much that this is also affecting higher education. And it seems like one of those things that just thinking about it, you thought they would be pretty much okay, but there's buildings where although things are closed, there's still costs related to those. They're still teaching classes. They're still paying some employees, and that adds up fairly quickly.
Elliot, what do you have coming up in Charlottesville tomorrow in the next few days that you're most excited about?
One thing, we have a Cavalier Daily writer who had been freelancing for us for a while. She's about to start her job over the summer in South Carolina, but she has been talking to some employees in the hospitals here about just how things have been going for them, how they're coping, how they're dealing with self-care, and that should be coming out in the next few days. And I think this is a really interesting insight of what's going on with them, with everything that's going on, because it's easy just to think of them just doing their duty and not really think about like what happens when that shift is over and how they're trying to decompress from all that they've seen.
Okay, well, we will look for that coming up in the next few days. Elliot, I also have to ask about this. A couple of weeks ago, you told me that you were shaving off your long beard to make room for the requisite mask. So how does it feel now? And is the beard coming back when this is all over?
Yeah, I'm still not really happy about shaving it all off. I've been growing it out for 2 years.
Oh, man.
And definitely once this is all over, I've vowed to shave. It'll be bigger and better than before.
Bigger and better. Well, I hope that happens sooner rather than later.
Same here.
Well, Elliot Robinson joined Charlottesville Tomorrow as its news editor in August 2018. He's also worked as a reporter and editor at the Richmond Times-Dispatch and the Daily Progress. Elliot, thanks very much again for your time. I hope we can check in with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you'll find that interview along with all our COVID-19 coverage on the WMRA app and at WMRA.org. Finally today, during the COVID-19 pandemic, it's easy to feel alone. But one Stanton neighborhood handles the isolation by howling together every evening. WMRA's Mike Tripp has the story.
5 minutes before 7 o'clock each evening, the neighbors of Sherwood Avenue walk outside. They gather along the street. And a few minutes later, Peggy Ruth Guerin recalls that first night. She was still inside at the time.
I thought, holy cow, what's going on out there? And I walked to the front porch and realized that it was people out there giggling and howling.
We always do this right at 7.
Stephen Talley says there were more than a dozen other people that first night, each maintaining proper distancing, of course. It lasted all of 3 or 4 minutes.
People began to laugh and talk back and forth about it. Everybody decided it was worth continuing to do.
So the next night, I got the word, and I just thought it was so amusing, and the idea of a pack was just a neat idea.
Talley is the mastermind behind the Sherwood Howl sessions.
Been kind of a free-spirited guy. I'm 71 years old, and I remember back sometime in the 70s, there was this movement called primal screaming, and I never got into that. But this is kind of akin to that, I think. It's a way for people just to kind of let off a little steam.
He feels it's a way for them to say they're not going to let the coronavirus defeat them.
We're going to do what we need to do to get through it, and we're just here to stay.
Although instigator for the house in Sherwood, Talley quickly admits the idea was not originally his.
This movement started in Colorado. I just happened to see a story on Facebook. It was kind of interesting because some guy out there decided it would be a good idea to go out on their porch and start howling.
Decision made, Talley began contacting his neighbors.
You know, we're a pretty tight-knit community over here. It's a small, dead-end neighborhood, so everybody knows everybody. So I just sent people an email and said, this is what I'm doing tonight.
Our neighborhood is really kind of like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood anyway. If you have two people out in the street talking, pretty soon you've got six people out there. So it was just a whimsical and kind of fun idea.
Jim Kibligan is another neighbor.
Steve Talley, who's my next-door neighbor, approached me, and I thought, absolutely, this sounds like a lot of fun and very Sherwood Avenue-esque.
Sherwood is where Kibligan grew up, returning as an adult.
It's a fun neighborhood. There's multi-generations. There are older people, retired people, and then there are also young families with kids.
But do they howl?
My whole family howls. My mom and dad live about 100 yards from us. My dad howls every day.
It's actually one of the highlights of his dad's day. And sometimes his mom would join in as well, as do Jim's children, those still living with him and his wife.
A lot of people say she maybe has the best howl on the street, but I think I maybe do.
And now the kids up the street have brought out a conch shell horn that they've added.
As the entire community participates, the question has to be asked, does it help?
The pandemic's changed things. It's obviously much scarier. I think it's made us all realize that we're lucky to be on a street where we know each other and we can help each other out.
I feel great. I mean, it's just lifted my spirits. Sometimes I get up in the morning with a sense of foreboding, and when you read the accounts of so many people dying in nursing homes and stuff, controversy around whether we should be staying at home, it's just really unsettling. But for some reason, the simple act of going out on the porch and howling a little bit kind of makes me feel better.
The howling is something that we actually look forward to, and you feel somewhat of a release. We've all been affected somehow by this, so you can let a good howl out, you feel a little bit better, you know things are going to get better, it's just going to take some time.
It is therapeutic. It really is. This activity that started out is just a kind of a fun idea. There's something to it, something profound. I hope we keep doing it.
It's such a simple thing to do. Howling requires a little bit of courage to get outside of yourself and not be embarrassed about somebody seeing you do that. I think it's therapeutic and effective in that regard.
For WMRA News, I'm Mike Tripp.
Check out the photos of the howlers on Sherwood Avenue and more on that story at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks so much for listening, and however you are keeping it going during this pandemic, I hope you stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.